That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapchi and Shauna Ray. Our theme music was composed by Alan Weatherhead. Thanks for listening today in Los Angeles. I'm Dorian Marina.
All righty. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM as we continue on a warm day in spring. What a wonderful day it is. I'm so happy that we finally got to have some warm weather. It is such a relief here in New York. And I feel much better. I feel like I'm a bear during the winter and the cold months. Feel so much more alive when it's spring and the leaves are on the trees and the flowers are blooming and certain shrubbery has certain flowers that only last a little while and then they go away. So, you know, just life is amazing. Have all of the beauty. You know, sometimes no matter how busy you are, always take time to stop and smell the flowers. Okay? Think about that. As we go. Oh, you know, one thing I want to point out to you is, again, this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM, and it is May 22nd, 2013, and we're going to start it really early for you, and that is...
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM, also streaming on the web at wbai.org. Also
Good evening.
No headphones. I did that without headphones.
It sounded like Stevie did that without headphones.
Yeah, Stevie, you were talking to yourself. Did you know that? Without the headphones,
you didn't realize.
Why
didn't you tell me?
You know what? You have to look our way.
No, oh, Stevie was gossiping with his favorite friend on the West Coast, and
David Perry is on the phone. Yeah, but I went to pick.
Good
up
evening,
the
David. How are you?
You know what, Stevie? When something goes wrong, you know what the natural thing to do is make excuses.
Well, it's not my fault. It's Dave's fault.
We hear you, David.
You hear me? Okay. Noise you heard in the background is my coffee maker. I have one of those Nespresso.
Okay, it's better than what. Boy. That's better than what I was hearing in the background. I heard Stevie, but this is Joe King, and welcome to the Personal Computer Show. If it sounds like we're amateurish and confused and really going crazy tonight, there's a reason for it.
Yeah,
we're amateurish and confused and really going crazy tonight.
Oh, boy.
That's the reason. You know, we're going to be on the air tonight, Hank, for two solid hours. We're going to run right through till 9 o'clock. And we've got some very interesting topics that we're going to cover because they've given us all this time because they didn't know what else to do with it. And they tried to package it and put it in the freezer and pull it out later when they needed it. They couldn't do that. They told us to eat it up right now while it's still fresh and hot. So we're going to be doing that. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting things. We're going to be talking even about some of the phone calls we've been getting. But before we do that, I want to give out one phone number that the folks might hear again and again and again. And that's 516-620-3602. Let me try that once more.
516-620-3602.
516-620-3602. Now, I'm not telling you should bet those numbers. You can if you want to. I'm telling you to keep those numbers because that's the numbers you're going to call if you want to later on join the WBAI family. But before you do that, I do want to point out that Hank has talked to people this week. He's done some research this week. And Off the Hook, which you think you should be listening to right now, is going to be on next week for 2 hours. And it takes them that long to put together a show, so that's why we told them we'd cover them this week while they're working to put together next week's show. But you know that... Emmanuel does a very good show.
I love that show.
It'd be worth his coming back, your coming back to listen to him next week.
Yeah.
This week, Hank called me well, just a few hours ago, maybe about 10, 12 hours ago, and he said, did I ever have trouble when I go into one of these local retail stores? One of his friends had just called him, and they had a terrible time. Hank, tell us about that.
Well, this is about the time of the year, and this time I felt that we should be alerting people to it. I have a friend who is a trial lawyer, and he called me up on Monday saying he was working on his desktop system to get a brief out because he had to, he needed it right away. And as he's sitting there, he noticed that the machine all of a sudden started slowing up, and then power got turned off completely. And he said that he thought he had some malware, so what he did was he pulled out his notebook. He plugged in the notebook, it powered up, he started running for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden the machine started slowing up, and it turned itself off. And I said, what happened after you try to replug it in? He says, no power at all, nothing at all. And I said to him, I know your problem. You just blew out your power supplies. He says, what do you mean? Everything was working fine. And to have two of them go out on me, that's unusual. I said, yep. And I said to him, you had a brownout. One of the things that most people don't realize in New York City is that we talk about surge protectors. Well, surge protectors is sort of like a really secondary or tertiary in terms of concern in terms of electrical power. Main thing is brownouts. Con Edison, which is the electrical supplier for New York City, what they do is they lower the voltage. Now, the voltage is should be 110, and it should range in the area of 108 to 113, somewhere there. And what they do is sometimes they cheat, they go down to 105. And when that happens, it actually causes equipment to heat up. And if they go any lower than that, it will heat up very rapidly.
And burn out.
And it will burn out the at least the power supply, and at least the intelligence on the motherboard is saying, hey, it's too hot. I'm turning it off. I have an overload. But in this case, he burnt out two power supplies. And what he did was he called up HP, and HP says, yeah, it sounds like you your power supply blew out. Fortunately for him, they overnight a new power supply for him yesterday, and that was Tuesday. And today he's shipping his notebook back, and they'll fix it for him. But he said to me, what should I do to prevent this from happening in the future? I said, well, why don't you buy a unit that I had actually really just gave a first look, I think about 2 weeks ago. It's a Cyber Power, and this unit is relatively inexpensive. Everything is relative. But it's a voltage regulator. It is a backup unit, good for anywhere between, 3 to 5 minutes, and that's all you need to power down a system. And it's also, it has eight AC sockets. Four of them have surge protection, four of them don't. So depending on the kind of equipment you have, if you don't need it, then you don't use it. But the nice thing about this unit is that the sockets are widely spaced so that if you have any brick units, it doesn't take up room. And the whole unit itself, I was talking with Joe about it a couple weeks ago. It's the size of a Meridian dictionary, and that's a decent size. And that'll give you about 255 watts of power. And they have make a one that's slightly larger than that that give you 500 watts. So what he did was he went into I won't name the store because I think that the store is a responsible store, but sometimes a salesman they get a little carried away. He went into one of these local stores that sell computer equipment, and obviously they did not have a unit that can provide voltage regulation and surge protection and UPS, uninterruptible power source. And he said, no, all you need is a surge protector.
No.
So he called me on the phone right there in front of the salesman. I said, walk out of there, and I'll tell you where to get it. And he did that, and I told him to call up one of these offline companies, and that was yesterday. They overnighted him. He got it today.
So it's basically a UPS, right?
No. It's more than UPS. Okay?
More than UPS.
A UPS is gives you uninterruptible power, but this one is also a voltage regulator, so that it will maintain voltage within a certain range.
UPSs do that.
No. UPS provides power. There's a difference.
Hank and Stevie, for a second, because you're really both saying the same thing, you just don't understand each other. With the UPS, Stevie, when the voltage drops below about 10% loss, it'll kick in. But that first 10% is enough to burn out your power supply or your refrigerator or whatever's running on it. So what a voltage regulator does is when Con Edison goes down more than 5% but less than 10%, it smooths it out for you. Then it'll cut in if it goes down more than 10%. So even if you have just your notebook running on it, you can get into a lot of trouble because Con Edison does not consider a 5% cut in voltage reportable. It doesn't have to report.
Which is a big problem with anyone who has electronics or low voltage.
Well, Con Edison's rules came in effect long ago when they barely had electricity. Forget electronics.
Right. Well, the other choice was to have rolling blackouts, and I think no one wants that.
No one wants brownouts.
Well, rolling blackouts is that they were selectively, literally black out a community.
I hate when that happens.
I got nailed a couple of times on that because one of the rules back in the day when Con Edison was doing rolling blackouts is during the day from 9 to 5, they would black out residential, non-commercial neighborhoods. And I happened to have had my office in a residential, non-commercial neighborhood, and I kept losing computers. Yeah. So in those days, UPSs were expensive, but I finally bit the bullet, and I think I spent $300 per desk to isolate them from the network, from the Con Edison network.
You know, the price of these units I'm talking about have come way down in price. I remember originally, you know, we were talking about $100, $200, $300 for these units. And as I reported, it's under $40 now. You can get something that can cover 255 watts easily. Voltage regulation, surge protection, and uninterrupted power supply for at least 5 minutes. That's decent. $40.
The reason for the 5 minutes is you should then immediately stop what you're doing and manually close down all your systems, save your files and close your files. Of course, most people use those 5 minutes to write one more paragraph.
Well, by the way, there's one story. Well, it's not really a story, but it happened, okay, is that because he's been listening to me, this friend of mine, is that he backs up religiously every day. Everything that, you know, he backs up. And because he lost his system unit, he lost his notebook, at least he had his backup data, and he might have lost, you know, some minor changes to it. He took the backup data and went to one of these stores where they had a computer, and he was able to get the stuff printed out. I mean,
He
backed up. It's important you back up.
By the way,
Dave, let me ask you, do you have any brownout conditions in California, or is it strictly blackouts?
No blackouts at all. No power problems ever in my life. Maybe 1967, I remember a plane hit the local power.
No, that doesn't count. No, come on.
But we just don't have them. We don't have the problems the way you have them out there.
Oh my. I know at least one or two people who were involved in Enron would love to believe that. Are you kidding me,
They
kept
man? Threatening us with brownouts when they got California to sign the, charge us whatever the traffic will bear thing. But I never had a brownout here. They had some in Northern California.
I'm not going to argue with you tonight, but when I get home, I'm going to simply go to the New York Times files. I won't go to the Los Angeles Times files because that would really embarrass you. I'll go to the New York Times files, and I'll just hit the rolling blackouts in California that hit the front page of the Times time after time.
I've never had the power go out ever in all my life.
Well, you're very lucky,
David. And I'm 58 years old.
Wow.
You're very lucky.
I know.
I wonder, Stevie, do you think that would have anything to do with the fact that he had a Sony generator in his basement?
No. He said in his whole life. I mean, I was here in New York for the blackout. Remember that?
Both of them.
Yeah.
But I mean, they make TV movies about New York blackouts. They're famous, right?
Yeah. Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
They never made the movies about the Southern California blackouts because they were just so common.
No, actually.
Okay, let me tell you something, though. Okay, I'm looking here and there's some in Beverly Hills. There's some in, Northern California. I live in Huntington Beach, California, right between two Edison steam plants and a nuclear plant.
Nice.
I could, plug in the Saturn V rocket and power it out of my backyard.
Hey, you're talking about Saturn rocket. There was some news.
Which we built here in Huntington Beach, by the way.
There was some news about the, you know, talking about space. As you know, there's an International Space Station, and it's manned by six crew members. And I was surprised to find out that the six crew members, amongst them, they have 140 laptops that they use. And, of course, they have different. They use it for different functions, different tests, and so on, as they're up there. And that averages out to about 23 laptops per person. And I didn't know that they were using a standard operating system up until very recently. What do you think that standard operating system was on these 140 laptops, David?
It'd have to be Linux.
Right.
No, it was Windows XP.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then, because Windows XP will no longer be supported, their discontinued support for XP.
Now it's going to be Linux.
They have now all switched over to Debian 6 OS,
nice.
Linux.
Nice. I have one machine running Debian, and you know what machine that is, Hank.
Okay. Are you running the Debian 6?
Debian, I'm running the latest. Actually, I'm not running Raspbian. I'm running Adafruit's flavor of Debian.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, you're talking about Wheezy then, right?
I'm not running Wheezy.
You're not running Wheezy? Adafruit.
No, Adafruit has their own distro.
Oh, okay.
So, it's different than Wheezy.
So I guess that now we can say that with a space station running 140 laptops with a Debian 6 Linux, that's what you could say. That's, you know, that's Linux. It's a journey to infinity and beyond, huh?
Well, I'll tell you what really interests me is playing
whose phone is that? Is that your phone?
That's the phone all the phones in my house are two line, and the second line was ringing, and I just let it ring through. If it happens again, it'll happen again. There's no way for me to block it. Anyway, so the you can turn off the GUI in Linux. You can say, okay, I'm just going to go back to the command line. And when you do, of course, you amp up your operating system's power a couple of times over where it was at, because most of what your computer is doing is running the graphical user interface. That's almost everything that your computer, all the cycles are given to anti-aliasing fonts and drawing the background picture, and
David,
all that stuff sucks up everything that your computer is
with
doing.
With Windows, it's the same thing if you go into command prompt.
No, because you never leave the GUI behind. You just open a command prompt window.
That's partly true.
So you're still running the GUI, but
the thing is,
leave the GUI.
If your entire screen is in command prompt, even though you have a background, you're not spending all those cycles refreshing the screen.
Well, you're still refreshing the virtual image of the screen wherever that is held.
Mm-hmm. By the way, go ahead.
Here's the other thing, though, is that I'm looking at the projects that people are doing here. We've been talking about this. And a lot of them go out and run a really limited UI. You know, they've stepped down from Debian to something that's a tiny UI, and then they're running straight from machine with no terminal, you know?
You've got to tell people what a UI is out there, you know.
User interface.
Right.
Right, because on the Raspberry Pi, frequently you're saying, oh, I want to make this into a thermostat. Well, a thermostat doesn't need a user interface other than the knob and the thing that shows you what the temperature is. So you can turn everything else off, and then your computer has lots more power available for it.
Well,
power by power, I mean machine cycles in which to analyze things.
Well, since we're talking about Windows, it was also just announced that Windows 8.1, in other words, instead of Windows 8, like we would have SP1, SP2, SP3, they actually come up with something called 8.1. It's an update to Windows 8. And the code name for it, because it had everyone fooled, was Windows Blue. So the question was, is Microsoft going to charge for Windows Blue like the way Apple treats each update, and they charge a minor price? And or are they going to call it SP1? Well, they're going to be releasing an update to Windows 8 called Windows 8.1 on June the 26th. And it's going to be free, a free update. So I'm looking forward to it. And by the way, there was a survey recently done, and they said that almost everyone that's using Windows 8 on their machine, very few people are in the metro mode at all, the modern screen. Everyone is just using it as in the desktop mode. So I guess Microsoft with 8.1, I just want to see what these new changes are. Are they going to be putting some of the, you know, like the start menu back in there? Are they going to put more emphasis and let you default to the desktop, or are they going to still push you more into the modern screen? Who knows? Hey, Dave, I have a question for you.
Yeah?
In different parts of the world, like, you know, like we're talking about the spaceships using Linux. So
sure.
They become quite, you know, after a while they're up in space, they become quite literate and knowledgeable about Linux and other, I know like Brazil, they're pushing Linux also. Where are the Chinese people getting their knowledge on Windows to attack U.S. targets?
What? That's easy.
Well, they're buying and also not buying, but just getting hold of copies of Windows.
Ding.
Well, David.
I can tell you if you go to Shamshuipo, which is just past Admiralty in Hong Kong, there's a shop in there that can sell you distros of Windows for like $2 a pop.
Yeah, but the thing is, obviously they got people concentrating because they are. They're doing a cyber spying into U.S. sites.
The type of cyber warfare, David, the type of cyber warfare that we're seeing, particularly from the Red Army people, is much more sophisticated than some hacker buying a $2 pirated copy of Windows in Hong Kong, which incidentally is not broadly available in the mainland.
Are they getting their expertise on Windows? Well, Windows is sold in China.
No, but you, but no, you, but no, but
Hank was trying to get into a story that I want you to cover, and he was doing it. So
where are you guys going? Because the U.S. is big too.
Where I'm going is in the whole concept of cyber warfare. And David and I were talking about it just the other day, and he was telling me that China, India, the United States, England, France, Jamaica, Trinidad and
Bermuda.
Tobago,
yeah,
any place that has electricity has cyber warfare emanating from there.
And why not?
Yeah, I mean,
why wouldn't they?
Right.
I mean, we are now in an era where computers and computer control of devices is ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I don't mind you using all these fancy technical terms, but what the devil's ubiquitous got to do with it?
Global, widespread use.
You're going to have something, whether it's a main water purification system or an air traffic control or a hospital or a weapons system or a bank, they are all connected to computers on the Internet, all of them.
But David, let me ask you, but why is the media so focused that China is doing it as opposed to the whole world is doing it?
Oh, how about America?
I think that's a sociology question more than anything else. China's the bad guy du jour. They're taking all our jobs. There's a billion of them. You know, they're all over there. That's a foreign place. They're still a socialist country. They must be the baddie bad guys, right? And, you know, we can, and it's to a certain extent, what they're saying is true. The Chinese are getting very sophisticated in their ability to hack into our networks. The reason is our networks are not very well protected. We went ahead and built all this stuff. I've said this 100 times on this show without thinking about how to protect it. So we end up with a whole world of telecommunications and computer communications that just aren't very well protected. And it's not child's play, but it's not far from it. I mean, you can...
It is far from it because I really tried to get into the Red Army computer last night because I understand that there's a recipe there for sweet and sour chicken that I really wanted and the Red Army has control over it. And I couldn't break into their system no matter what password I tried.
Well, what's funny is they said, oh, and they went silent and now they're up and at it again. And that always makes me smile because they went silent because we made a bunch of noise and the channels that they were on went away. How long do you think it takes this stuff to get re-engineered? We're living in a world where I keep saying there's now 250,000 new unique pieces of malware discovered every single day, 365 days a year. And the reason for that is that there are actually commercial companies building malware out there.
Yeah, but David,
as fast as they can do it.
David, let me ask you though, why is it that like the New York Times had it on page one? Making it so
I can tell you exactly why. Okay, a couple of like 10 years ago, I got a call from Wolf Blitzer, and they put me right on the air right that second. He wanted to ask me about a piece of malware that was circulating right then. This is the end of the world, right? No, it's not quite the end of the world. Isn't this the most dangerous thing you've ever seen? No, it's not the most dangerous. Turns out CNN was infected. The reason, I would say, somebody from the Times is going to call me up and jump down my throat for saying this, but the Times got hacked. We all know this. It was a big international story. The Chinese hacked the Times. The Times ran a story about corruption in the Chinese government or something that was involved, the Chinese turned around and hacked into the Times. They were afraid to steal the insider sources. Now, this becomes, at this point, a...
What?
Stevie, I think we have an engineering problem.
Did you drop him? Drop the line?
Did it look like I dropped hacking.
Yes, it did. It looked right. I can see it right there.
Okay.
Right. We do a lot of hacking. We are ostensibly the ones behind Stuxnet. Our government has never admitted it.
The biggest budget going.
Yeah, well, it's a huge budget, and that's only the part you can see, because if you've worked for our government, you know that the budgets are like icebergs, right? They're cold.
Actually, the biggest budget you can see, you can't see, and that's for the Congress, the money that's
right.
Wasted in the Congress. But let's not go there. What we were talking about, so David, what you're saying is what you're saying really is that the cyber warfare that we read about as science fiction, at least on the spying level, is there.
It's serious as a heart attack. It's here every day. But it's a lot worse than they are letting on. There's a lot more. I contacted a number of experts, and they go, don't say anything if you can't cite sources and cite facts. I'm sorry. There's a ton of this going on. There's a megaton of this going on.
The question that I have is when is it too much? And what I mean by that is at some point, some very low-level person, somebody like Stevie, is going to press one button too many, and some asshole in the Pentagon is going to say, let's press our button, and we start with thermonuclear warfare.
Let's hope not.
Oh, it's going to be when, not if.
Let's hope not. I don't want to live through I live right next to the Seal Beach Naval Weapons Depot.
I live two blocks from the UN. Come on, it's the first thing that's going to go.
Hey, David, so you're saying that this New York Times article is real, but really it's sort of like it's not. It should not come as a surprise. You're saying
it shouldn't come as a surprise. It's way late in the coming to make that assumption and make that article. They should have been telling us that 10 years ago.
Well, let me ask you. Let's assume that China is the most guilty of it. I'm making that assumption.
Well, you know, this is difficult for me to put forward because China is just big. There's a billion people living there.
Have you counted them?
Not personally. 1.2 billion?
1.2, 1.3.
Somewhere like that. 1.4 in India. So we keep talking about, there's huge Indian hacker chains. Of course, there's huge Indian cracker chains. There's huge Indian licorice whips. You know, India, China, these are gigantic, enormous countries with four times the population of the U.S. And
it's not a question that it's got four or five or ten times the population of the U.S. It's that in the U.S. we have a whole bunch of really wonderful technologists, hackers, if you will, who come from India and China.
And America.
And they will go back with all the things that they have learned, because in our infinite wisdom we know that once we've let them train in our best universities, we won't let them stay here to work. So we
actually
have to...
a lot of the development research is done in India and China these days.
That's right.
It's not all happening.
Well, you know, while I got you talking about India and China, David, let me ask you a simple one. You know, in the last 2 weeks that we were not on the air, there was a big incident about $45 million global bank heist because they were able to, someone was able to hack two Mideastern banks and were able to raise the debit limit. And the beauty was that they could do it The fallacy in the poor planning was they needed thousands of people to hit the ATMs at one time.
What I find interesting is nobody that I know of heard about those two major hacks, those two major break-ins in Dubai until after the $45 million was taken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. How after come? It was done.
How come?
Well, I'm not employed right now in the industry, but when I was, we would hear about stuff like this, and we were under contract to not mention it. The companies
But David, what I'm saying is the second bank in Dubai didn't hear that the first bank was broken into.
No, of course not.
And yet they needed
nobody's going to admit that they're in trouble.
Yet they needed the information stolen from the first bank in order to make the information from the second bank viable.
Right, understood, but no company is ever going to admit that they're in trouble. It's denial. They would rather die.
I remember when this whole thing
admit that they're in trouble and potentially negatively impact their stock price.
Exactly.
I remember when this whole thing started and with ATMs, I mean, and the ATMs of the Royal Bank of Scotland needed a three-letter PIN, as opposed to anything else. And somebody who will have to remain nameless, but I spoke with him one-on-one, who worked at Bell Labs, spent all of 10 minutes on the phone with them explaining how long it would take him to break every three-letter PIN there is. And they said, oh, yes, they know that now, but they've already given them out to all of their customers. And if they now tell them they need a four-letter PIN, it'll be admitting that the three-letter PIN is not effective. And the three-letter PIN stayed in effect for 2 years. And every time an account was hacked, they made good on it to keep the publicity away.
You know, if your knees are wet and you can see the pyramids, you might be standing in denial.
Wait, if your knees are wet?
I love that. David, thank you. I'm going to quote you on that. Of course, I will not give the proper attribution. I'll say I made
it
up.
If your knees are wet and your ankles dry, is that what you said?
No.
No, if your knees
are wet. I know. I twisted it around.
And a higher part of your anatomy is dry. Yeah.
But we should have a six-number pin.
Actually, we should have, what's it called, David?
We've got to make it kind of easy.
A dual
pin? Yeah, that would be great.
Two-factor authentication.
A dual form of authentication.
I just read a really good article that we talked about in here about the methods that don't work. And dual-factor authentication is failing to deliver its promise.
Why is that?
Because all of the one-factor authentications in the world that they're based on are already all hacked.
Well,
your one-factor authentication, like somebody has your bank number, they just haven't figured out exactly how much they can steal from you.
Exactly. But I came across one just yesterday myself when I was dealing with some online situation, which I don't want to mention. What they worked out was very clever. On a piece of email, I put in my password. And then when I got to their site, I did certain things, and then they sent back an authentication to my cell phone, and I needed that authentication to get back to them in order for them to start acting on what I had told them in the first place. Now, that's pretty tricky because they would have to
side chain authentication. I first saw that in Poland. Okay, they've been doing that for decades for years in Poland.
Well, that was not in this country, but it was not Poland either. I suppose.
Well, they do it here. We do it.
But they phone your cell phone and they go, did you just buy $150 worth of gasoline?
No, that's not what you're talking about, is it?
No. It's similar.
Second way of authenticating. They text you a code.
To me, it's a true authentication.
Yeah.
I'm authenticating to them that I know the password for their account. And they're sending me back to my pre-registered cell phone, which they already had in, a key, a code, a PIN that I would then use for further ordering. And frankly, I won't order any more from any companies that don't have something at least similar to that. And
they should all have that.
You know, David, one of the things that we've always been talking about is that as a general rule, we do not use Wi-Fi or wireless transmission to do any online transaction. But let me turn the question around a little and ask you differently. What do you think is needed that will entice you to say it's safe?
What? Okay, first off, you know that I don't do online transactions at all.
Uh-huh. You follow the FBI school of thought.
Now wait a minute. You mean to say if you talk to me on the phone, you wouldn't even trust that either?
Hank, you know the answer is to not be connected to the internet.
Yeah.
No. Wait. David. Can I tell you where your fallacy is? Do you go to a restaurant?
Yes, I do. My credit
card. Do you ever use a credit card?
No.
You know, one thing Hank doesn't understand about you that I do understand, you may be insane, but you're consistently insane.
Yes, I started out listening to KPFK. That was my first misstep, okay?
Oh, boy. Well, KPFK, for those people who are listening to us here, not on the internet, but through the broadcast of the...
Pacifica Berkeley.
KPFK
is Los Angeles.
It's Pacifica Los Angeles.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Southern California. You remember what Barry Gray said about Southern California?
No, what did he say?
Barry Gray was a great New York talk radio personality on the commercial band, and he came from California, and he said that in 1938, right before, and this was the reason he left Southern California, there was a massive, torrential, absolutely horrible earthquake. It actually tilted the whole planet Earth by just a fraction of a degree, and all the nuts fell into Southern California.
Now, hey, listen, David, remember there was a very famous song, It Never Rains in Southern California?
Yeah.
Jim Croce?
No. I don't remember who it was, but it wasn't Jim Croce.
Tony.
It wasn't Jim Croce?
I can look it up for you.
No, look it up for us, because my computer's
not working.
It
never rains in Southern California?
It never rains, it pours.
Not Jim Croce? Sorry.
Oh, I thought it was.
Be that as it may.
It never
Since,
rains.
No, no, please
California.
Don't sing.
Yeah. David, you're a good magician. But
sing
you
by the window, I'll help you out.
You couldn't carry a tune in a bucket.
By the way, do you know the song Far Away?
It was written by Albert Hammond and Mike Hazlewood.
No, who made it famous?
It was the title of a song first released by Hammond, a British-born singer-songwriter, in 1972. The song is from his album, It Never Rains in Southern California. It reached the number 5 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 that year.
Thank you very much, David Perry.
But who was the performer?
He just told you.
Hammond.
Hammond.
Albert Hammond?
Yes, and we all know who he is. Okay, listen.
One-hit wonder, actually.
Listen, yeah. Folks, since they brought up this whole subject, these folks who are surrounding me with their own form of insanity, but they did say KPFK, and they also may have mentioned KPFA, and they mentioned WBAI. Well, let me mention something. These are all stations that belong to the Pacifica Network. And the Pacifica Network, as you know, if you've listened to WBAI over the last few weeks, is about to come crashing down on our very delicate little heads. And the reason it is, some people say, is management, and some people say is talent, and some people say is engineering, and other people say is the national economy. Let me tell you something. I'll tell you what it is. It's a shortage of money. And you folks who are listening can cure that problem all by yourselves. And I'm going to give you the secret, because there is a secret to this. And I'm going to whisper it. 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602.
Why is that a secret?
Well, it's a secret, I know, because nobody knows about it, because nobody's calling it.
Yeah, right.
And so it must be a secret. Now, if you call that number and you tell them that you are representing people who want to keep the Personal Computer Show on the air,
the whole station,
you can tell them that you would like to give some money. Any amount of money, I don't really care how much, $100, $1, $10,000, whatever you have, whatever you can spare to have free speech radio stay on the air in this area. And you can tell them that you know for a fact that Hank Key broke his neck to put together some really terrific premiums. Is the plural of premiums premia? I don't know. You can give a cash donation, credit card donation, just a donation of $25 or more, and tell them that you want the Personal Computer Show white papers. And Hank will tell you later on what's in the white papers. I'm not going to go into that right now. Give them your email address. They will, when they receive the money back from you, when you send in, if it's a credit card or if you send in a check, they're going to send you a release.
Confirmation.
A confirmation or a receipt of some sort by email. Now, you take that confirmation and you send it to pcradio.whitepapers@gmail.com. Let me repeat that. pcradio.whitepapers@gmail.com.
What? Say that one more time.
pcradio.whitepapers. WHITEPAPERS.
Yeah.
At, that's the commercial at sign. You do a shift number two.
Yeah, like the email.
Gmail.
Yeah, gmail.
.com. And we'll send, we'll bypass the entire WBAI premium department, which is a little bit overworked these last few years.
Yeah, I think so.
So what we're saying is that people have been complaining, said that they made good their pledge, and they're still waiting for their premiums. So I sat there with Joe, and I said, look, I understand them, and unless we can improve the way we deliver the premiums, we lose credibility. This is true for everyone, all the producers at WBAI. So I said, if there was some way, and in this case, we're talking about white papers, if some way we can get a confirmation, well, the fact that they can take the money from you, the one who's pledging it, give you a confirmation, and instead of relying on the management, I use the word in quotes, the management here, to let us know who it is, the names and so on, hey, you just take that confirmation, send it to us, we'll take care of it, we'll send you the white papers.
But you have to send us a copy of that.
You just forward the confirmation.
The confirmation you get in your email, just forward it to pcradio.whitepapers@gmail.com and put in a little note just to remind us that you want to
Is there a link on the website?
Okay,
now, I also want to tell you that it would help us if you were to just say, you know, what is your real name as opposed to your email name? Because sometimes, like, you know, when I'm trying to answer some questions, I get someone like Cyber Princess. I don't know who Cyber Princess
yes,
is.
Yes, you do.
As a matter of fact, you do.
Well, it depends on what the domain name is, because I know two different Cyber Princesses with different domain names.
And you know both of them.
I happen to know there's two, but there may be more, you know.
There may indeed. All right. The other thing I'd like to tell you about is if you happen to really be the kind of person who feels that WBAI is worthy of your full support, but you don't have the kind of money where you can just write out a $1,000 check or a $10,000 check. Some of you can't do that. But you can be a real buddy and support the station. So why not be a real WBAI buddy and pledge $10 a month for a year? $10, that's, what is that, Stevie? One pack of cigarettes a month.
No, pack of cigarettes is maybe $14 now.
Oh,
$13, $14,
really?
Yeah.
So it's not even a full pack of cigarettes.
A pack of cigarettes?
Yeah.
And if you do pledge $10 a month or more, WBAI will not only thank you very much, but they'll give you a year's subscription to The Nation magazine, which has got to be worth...
More than that.
At least.
And a tote bag. It's a high-quality tote bag.
And what you would do is you would put all your extra money in that tote bag
right. When
you go to the bank every week. And it only costs you $10 a month. Now, I'm going to tell you that I understand that some of you, in principle, you just don't want to give $10 a month to anybody, not even to New York State Lotto. I mean, you just don't want to give up $10 a month. So Hank put together a thing with all the basic essentials utilities that a computer person like Stevie would want. And he's saying if you pledge $50 to WBAI, just $50, he'll send you – is that a CD or is
it's a CD. It's a bootable CD so that if your system hard disk doesn't work, you can still boot up this rescue disk.
Actually, later on in the show, before we all go home at 9 o'clock, Hank will explain to you what he means by a bootable CD, but not tonight. Not right now, I mean. Now, for those of you who are really, you've come into it, you were part of that three-quarters of a billion-dollar lotto prize the other day. That was your uncle out in Texas, and he's sending you up.
I thought it was Florida.
Wherever it was. And you have a lot of money. Well, if you can give us a pledge of $75, that's only $25 more than the $50 I was asking for. Personal Computer Show Toolkit DVD from Hank and his Basic Essentials CD. You get both of them for a $75 pledge. Later on, he'll tell you what's in them. But for the moment, you know, you can go to our website and you can see the, what is our website?
PCRadioshow.org.
So you go to our website, and Michael someplace there has put up all the table of contents and things like that. But you don't have to do that. You know me. I'm Joe King. Would I tell you a lie? You need this DVD. You need this CD. It'll be good for you. With a little bit of milk and sugar, you can have it for breakfast. If you put ketchup on it and roast it really good, you can have it for dinner. Trust me. Just get the CD.
Doesn't taste good roasted.
You know,
great for the kids' lunches.
And for my sick grandmother, I poach it, and it's really good poached. You want the DVD for that because the CD gets a little bit tough when you poach it.
Now, during the second hour that we are on from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. New York time.
Oh, excuse me, Hank. I've got to go back. If any of the things that I just suggested got your juices flowing, you really got your appetite up for them, what you do – it used to be in the old days, I'd say, you know that black piece of plastic on the table? I can't say that anymore. You go to your phone. It can be a cell phone. It can be a mobile phone. It can be an internet phone. Whatever you use. It can be a can of Campbell's soup without the stuff inside it tied to a string to your next-door neighbor's house. But whatever you use for a phone, and pick it up and you either dial, if you remember the dial, or you punch buttons if you know how to do that. Or on my phone, I can just talk. It has voice recognition. 516. That's three letters. 516.
Three numbers.
516. 620. Another three. It's pretty easy to remember now. 620. 3602. There's four in that group, so I'll repeat it. 3602. So if you put them all together, 516, 620, 3602, somebody's going to pick up the phone and say something like, thank you for calling WBAI, and you're going to say, get out your pencil, brother, because I am going to make a pledge.
How do you know it's a brother? Why can't it be a man?
It could be a sister.
Right.
The man don't pledge.
We're all brothers and sisters under the sun.
At the second part of the...
Wait a minute. I'm talking to Stevie here.
What?
We're all brothers and sisters under the sun.
Absolutely.
Now, you're going to argue with me? I'm going to throw you out of here.
Wait. I'm going to differ with you because Stevie may claim he's a Neanderthal.
We're all... Do you know what the word all means? We're all brothers and sisters under the sun.
Hey, good night, everybody. No, what was that phone number again?
That was 516... 620-3602.
Now, the reason why Joe is pitching it now, and I will also repeat it, that that phone number, 516-620-3602, is that starting in the second half of the show, which is from 8 to 9 p.m. New York time, I'm going to be spending time talking about something that I had indicated about 2 weeks ago that I would spend some time on, which is how does one... create an operating system that is portable, or how does one create and install?
Create a copy of an operating system.
No. You got to hear what I'm saying. In other words, how do you make an operating system portable that can run off a flash drive, or how do you make a operating system that you can move from machine to machine?
You mean a copy of an operating system?
No, I didn't say that.
You don't mean make your own operating system.
When I say make, I mean you assemble it, you put it together, okay?
You make a copy of it.
No, it's not necessarily a copy, okay? In other words,
are you making the original first version of it? There's no copies of it anywhere else in the world?
Well, if you put it on a flash drive, you've run it on system A or B, it's still one copy.
But it's a copy that you put on the flash drive from the download that you made.
But it could be the initial download. Just
but
remember
it's still,
that.
It was up at the top of the download chain.
No, it's not. It's not. Okay? So that's why we're talking about
it. If you're downloading it from no place?
That's the whole thing. I'm going to also be talking about how does one create an operating system to run where you don't have a base operating system to run with.
And you don't need a 3D printer to do it.
No, so now the reason I'm going to do that is because I'm sure that many people want to be listening to that, and if they're listening to it, they don't, and, you know, we want to say, listen, we're clearing the decks, we're telling you that we're going to be talking about running an operating system off a flash drive or moving it around or making it portable, and you may say, listen, I don't have time to call 516-620-3602. So in the next 5-10 minutes, we're saying, hey, listen, I know you can make that pledge, because once you make that pledge, you can take the time. And by the way, one of the things I did say to Joe was this is going to be part of our white papers. I have two parts of the white papers.
So now, just to remind you, if you make any pledge over $25,
$25 or more,
that and you send your confirmation or your recognition or whatever BAI sends you by email to pcradio.whitepapers@gmail.com, and you'll get the white papers. I don't know how many white papers you're going to get. It depends on how many Hank gives me, but I know you're going to get one on what this is all about and what it means to make a bootable or an operating system on a stick, a bootable stick. It's got some other things he's going to talk
about. A couple weeks ago, I had given a three-part discussion on building your own computer system or desktop system. And essentially, as I wrote about all the different criteria you have to look into and how do you put it together, Joe looked at it and he says, and his conclusion was, hey, if I want to buy one that's already assembled, these are the same steps I should go through to find out what I really need and what I really want. Instead of just looking at a unit from brand A or brand B and look at the price and say, I don't know, they're selling it for X dollars and maybe I should buy it, and without knowing really how fast the processor is or whether it's really for you or if you have enough memory, you really should go through the exercise. You know, it's like not because someone says, hey, here's a good unit for such a price. So those two white papers will be part of it. Now, what I do want to add is that I'm going to be in the white papers I will be including, because it's not practical to do it on the air, because I'll just give you a whole lot of gibberish, is that I will identify programs that I did it a little differently. If you have a problem, there's more than one way of solving a problem. So my way of solving this problem was I have to find as much as possible everything that is free. In other words, yes, I could go buy a tool to do something.
Well, you can't get Windows free.
Well, no, you can't get Windows Well, the answer is yes. I hate to say that.
Well, you can.
You can.
Let me put it this way, folks. Hank is going to tell you how to build an operating system on a stick. There's a couple of tricks that other people haven't yet figured out. There's a couple of tricks. I'm not saying Hank is the only one in the world who knows how to do it, but it's a couple of tricks that only a few other people
know. Let me put
it
this way. You can actually download Windows for free, whether it was intended that way or not. That's another story. Okay?
What do you do it once you have it?
You could use it.
Yeah, what do you do? Explain, why do you want to have it that way?
Why would you want Windows on a stick?
Right.
Well, very simple is that I'll give you a good example, okay? I'm not going to start the discussion for another 10 minutes, but one of the reasons why people would want an operating system on a stick or a portable operating system is, let's say, Joe, you have a Windows XP system. And you know, like these astronauts know, that, you know, Microsoft is going to drop support on it. But it just so happens you have a very valuable vertical application that only runs on Windows 95 or XP, and it won't run properly in Windows 7, Vista, or 8. then does that mean you maintain this old machine just to run that vertical application?
I'm doing that, yes.
Another example would be you happen to have I know I have it, okay? I know Stevie probably has it. I have a Nikon film scanner. Now, Nikon no longer makes and sells film scanners, but this is a high-end Nikon film scanner. It's very good, but there's no Windows 7 support drivers for it. And so do you maintain a separate Windows XP machine for it?
I do that also.
Yeah.
Now, suppose I had this there was a dictionary that is only available under...
Well, normally with a dictionary, I tell Hank, forget about it. But I actually do have the Oxford English Dictionary, all 14 volumes CD.
And it doesn't run on Windows 7?
It does not run on Windows 7.
So these are examples where, yes, you still have that, where it's not 100%. Now, we are not like the International Space Station where, when they want something, the budget goes out the window. They don't really care what it is. To quote you, Joe, when it comes to the space program, they'll spend the money. Right, Joe?
They don't spend a penny. They take it out of my pocket.
Oh. Well, there was a story that came out that we were talking about is that... NASA is funding a major research project on 3D printing of food. Now, they already have a one where they
Steve
can...
Steve is already asking me, who wants to eat plastic?
Well, no. Now, wait a minute now. They actually were able to do 3D printing and create a chocolate.
Nice.
Now, there's a reason why NASA...
That's
now, wait, Joe, why would NASA want to be able to create food?
Well, chocolate.
First of all, we all get urges for chocolate every so often. No, the reason is one of the big problems facing NASA, and I did have a friend whose son was involved in it, but one of the big problems facing NASA was planning a spaceship to Mars, and they're only saying Mars because that's the closest body that they think they can land on in a reasonable period of time.
Beyond the moon, that is.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. And one of their biggest problems is not all the things that you and I think about, how to get there and how much thrust and how much fuel. What are you going to eat on this many-year-long trip? I mean... You could need another whole spaceship just for the ham and eggs. And NASA is saying now, well, if we could just keep a couple of bottles of these amino acids it's floating around and then take them and print out a breakfast of ham and eggs, that would be a lot easier.
Wait, Joe, that sounds like Star Trek, you know that?
No, Star Trek, no. Star Trek had a replicator. And all you had to do is walk to the wall and face a piece of plastic that meant nothing and say, computer, and Marjorie Roberts would say back to you, working, and then you would say, computer, make me a ham and egg sandwich, and she would say, working, and then you would have it. And the fact that she was married to the producer had nothing to do with it.
No.
So NASA is reported to be spending... doing the initial funding on it, and...
Mute all that time. You mean Majel Barrett.
I did, yes. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, well, that's interesting. It's all going to be like... Do you remember they used to put those things on cake decoration that were like little dots of stuff that were printed up into letters by a machine? That's what... it's all going to be the same goo. It's just going to be printed into a different shape. Why not just eat a tube of goo?
No. They're going to print the food so it looks like the food. It's going to smell. It's going to have smell and taste with it, too.
David, all things are possible. I know I'm going to say something now that you're going to think is purely science fiction and can never come about. But
I live in a science fiction world.
But you do realize that they now have an operation that can change the actual size of your stomach so you can eat less and still feel full?
Come on.
It's amazing. He knows that. They can do nowadays.
I don't know what they're going to think of next. I know one guy who was a bit overweight and had this procedure done, and he lost over 100 pounds.
David, let me ask a question. Do you think that in your lifetime, this maybe will be a way of saying we no longer have famine?
No.
Yeah, I agree with David.
It's a lot less
100 years from now.
Inclusive.
100 years from now.
Expensive, even 1,000 years from now, it's a lot less expensive to just grow food than to grow the, grow the raw material.
Well, wait a minute. More than that, I'd like to say that, and I don't want to get the two of you too upset, but in 100 years from now, there might, the way we're going, there might not be any people left to feed.
That's now, also quite true.
Now, let me tell you one thing that got me when I was reading this news item about NASA.
And that would solve that problem, Joe.
Yes. Let me tell you the thing that I looked at and I said to Joe, this is either a misprint or it doesn't sound right at all, okay? NASA is funding this initial grant, and I use the word initial grant, of only $125,000 to reproduce food. Now, do you think that it's they're going to need a lot more money than that?
Well, the $125,000 is simply to conduct a survey to see whether enough people think it's possible to continue.
Do you think that they're going to get more money than that?
If enough people come up with the concept that it is possible to do it, then they'll get the necessary hundreds of millions of dollars.
If they're able to replicate chocolate.
Space travel, all taken together, is an enormous corner case. Where it is so scarcified. I mean, you're talking about there will be 10 people will make that trip to Mars in 50 years and probably not much sooner. And that will be all of the human beings that will go to Mars for 100 years after that. Because the moon, Mars is very difficult.
Yeah, but also when you get there, as opposed to the moon, the people who are already there are not going to be as passive as the Native Americans were a few centuries ago.
Yeah, your regular Martians are really upset about the whole thing. No, the problem is, right now, using our best science, right now, we believe that we will get there and won't be able to land. Okay? Because if we land, there's no way to get enough power to take off again. Twice the gravity of the moon. The moon is 1/6 Earth G. Mars is 1/3 Earth G. So you have a much smaller, what's called a gravity well, to get up, to get out of Mars.
I don't think the differential is that great. Mars is a smaller planet than Earth.
Yes, but it's 1/3 Earth gravity.
That means only.
And the moon is 1/6 Earth gravity.
Oh boy.
Now, you know a little physics. That means you're going to need a lot more reaction mass to get up that gravity well.
Well, David, I'm hearing a tinkling in the background of that famous theme music of the Personal Computer Show. I don't hear it too much, but I hear it in the background, which means that we're coming up on the 8 o'clock time frame. This is WBAI broadcasting on 99.5 FM here in New York City, and we're now going into the regular broadcast of the Personal Computer Show. This is Joe King. With me here in the studio is Hank Key and Stevie Deeby. Coming to us from the West Coast are the dancing melodies of David Perry. David?
And his orchestra.
I'd like to say that we've got a lot of interesting things to talk about tonight for those of you who have just tuning in.
But why lie? Okay, sorry, I'm all set up, really.
For those of us who are just tuning in, Hank is going to be talking in a little while about how to develop an operating system on a stick. And it has nothing to do with ice cream on a stick. The ice cream sandwiches will still be there. This is an operating system on a stick. And he's going to tell you a few other things about portable Windows operating systems and what makes Windows 7 so much different from Windows XP, Linux? I'm going to give you a phone number right now, 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. And that's the number that you would call to help support commercial-free radio here in New York, free speech radio here in New York, and we're also going to come up with some ways to try and entice you into joining the WBAI family. First and foremost, I want to point out that anybody who makes a donation of $25 or more is entitled to get the Personal Computer Show white papers that Hank has put together covering. Hank, what sort of things will be in the white papers?
Well, two primary things. One will be the whole discussion that I had over a 3-week period, a month or 2 months ago, about building your own computer and some of the criteria you need to go through. And, of course, the really logical conclusion you came out with, Joe, is that these are the same steps short of building your own of how you go about selecting a computer system of your own.
Right. If you know what is going into the one you build and you can get that built by somebody else for just a few pennies more, it might be worth it to you.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, you go to a restaurant, if you know what the ingredients are on a menu, you have a better idea of what you're ordering as opposed to you just hear a name and you say, it sounds good, maybe I'll order it. And it's, instead of being a hit or miss, it's more accurate if you know exactly what is in it. And then you could say, you know, I bought a machine, I didn't realize it didn't have USB 3.0, I expected it.
I'll be much more specific. I bought a machine, and Hank said to me, are you going to use your old monitor on it? And I said, yes. And he said, well, what'd you tell you to me?
It had no VGA port.
And I said, what do you mean it has no VGA
port? It uses HDMI. And you said, what?
Who ever heard of such a silly thing?
Guess what? That's the modern world now.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Yes, indeed. But you don't know these things until you know them. So I had to do a little quick tap dance, and I got that
and
working.
And incidentally, if you get a computer and you say, well, I need an HDMI cable. I have a VGA cable here. I don't have it. And you go down to the Best Buy or someplace, and they're really expensive. I just bought two of them off of eBay, which I bartered for oranges that I sent in the mail. Because I didn't want to use my credit card online. I've got two HDMI cables for $5.15.
That's a lot of money.
Hank doesn't spend that much.
Not when they're 80 apiece over at Best Buy.
Well, I went to the Trenton Computer Festival in March, and I picked up three of them. I think they were, either 6 feet long, and it cost me $3 each.
Yeah, they're all 2 meters.
They're 3 meters, okay. Yeah. At any rate.
Well, the other white paper will be on how to make your operating system portable if you need it, and we'll talk about the logistics of it.
And the third thing?
Well, those are the two things that are going to be in the white paper.
Oh, that's in the white paper.
Right.
Okay, now, if you want those white papers, all you have to do is call 516-620-3602, and you want to tell them you're pledging for the white papers, or just tell them you're giving $25 or more. If you give $50 or $75 or $150, you're still entitled to the white papers. When they send you a confirmation, just forward that confirmation to pcradio.whitepapers@gmail.com. Now, Hank has put together a CD with all the utilities that he travels around with in his pocket, literally, so that no matter where he is, he always has the tools he might need to do any number of different things on his computer. And we'll talk about the details later, but he calls it the Basic Essentials CD. And if you pledge to WBAI $50, they will be happy to send you the Basic Essentials CD. And you make that pledge at 516-620-3602. Two more things I want to talk about. One is the Personal Computer Show Toolkit DVD. That's got almost 4 gigs of utilities, papers, programs.
Very useful stuff. I want to jump in here and say excellent job, Hank.
Thank you, Hank says. He was just off camera, but he's saying thank you. And the Personal Computer Show Toolkit DVD comes with a bonus of the Basic Essentials CD, and you get both of them for $75 pledge. And finally, the WBAI Buddy is a way that you can all year long express your support for free speech radio here in New York, particularly for the Personal Computer Show. Make a pledge of $10 or more every month. You can do that with a credit card. You can do that with an electronic funds transfer from your bank. $10 or more a month. If you can afford $20 a month, if you can afford $150 a month, but $10 or more a month. And in appreciation for that support, WBAI will send you a membership in BAI, which entitles you to vote for the board of directors, a tote bag, which will be very handy in going to and from the grocery store and not having to have that plastic foul up our landfills. and a 1-year subscription to Nation magazine, which in itself is worth a lot of money. And thanks to the generosity of Nation magazine, that will be thrown in as a package. Again, 516-620-3602. Hank?
Before I begin my discussion about a portable operating system, I do want to make a couple of public service announcements, because we are really an extension of the computer clubs out there and computer organizations. And so long as we can continue to be on the air for you, we make the announcements for you. For instance, tomorrow there will be a special presentation. That's tomorrow, May the 23rd. And the location, and you got to hear this, Third Ward. The Third Ward is located at 195 Morgan Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. The meeting is Third Ward, 195 Morgan Avenue, Brooklyn. And the topic of presentation is 3D printing for software engineers. So this event is about how do you go about creating software related to 3D printing. It is open to the public. And if you want more information on this meeting, which starts at 7:30 p.m., you go to the letter D, that's 3D, printing.nycsoftware.org. Let me repeat that. The letter D, that's 3D, printing.nycsoftware.org. Meeting tomorrow at 195 Morgan Avenue in Brooklyn, and that's at 7:30. We have also another meeting to be held by the Princeton PC User Group, and their meeting is May the 28th. And I believe May 28th is, sometime next week? Yeah, it probably is, right after Labor Day. Beyond the Basics and Android Tablets and Phones, it will be held at the Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey at 7 p.m. Now, because we're going to be not on the air next week, I'm going to make a couple more announcements beyond that so you have an idea what the meetings are. DAX, the Danbury Area Computer Society, will have a presentation on Twitter on Tuesday. The presentation's on Twitter, Tuesday, June 4th at 7 p.m. at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium. The Westchester PC User Group will be having a presentation of Animation with CorelDRAW on a Thursday, June the 6th, 7 p.m. at the White Plains Middle School, 128 Granville Avenue, White Plains, New York, in room 261. And finally, the Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will be having a presentation on iPad development Friday, June the 7th, 8 p.m., Scotch Plains Rescue Squad in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. We do have other announcements that goes beyond that, and for more information, you go to our website, pcradioshow.org. On the left-hand side, we have announcements, and you can get more detailed information. But the only thing that you won't find there, because this is something that just came to us, is that if you go to the website, 3dprinting.nycsoftware.org, and the meeting is at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow, May the 23rd, 3rd Ward, 195 Morgan Avenue. If you go to that website, you can then print your own ticket to get in. In other words, you need a ticket, and you could print your own ticket.
I need a ticket to get in a lot of Broadway. I need a ticket to get in a lot of Broadway shows. Can I print those too?
Yes.
Well, if they happen to have it, if it's for free, or
I mean, what about this 3D printing business? Can I print tickets?
Well, you know, with 3D printing, I really this is what you would truly call disruptive technology.
What?
Disruptive technology, which means that it changes the way we may look at the world, changes the way we react, changes the way we do things, such as the internet has done that.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
It's changed marketing tremendously. Like, for instance, with 3D printing, at what point in time do you say, I don't need inventory?
Never.
Never?
That's pretty close to the truth.
Well, I guess with Stevie, he will always have an inventory of, $100 bills or $20 bills?
Oh, yeah, especially now that the leaves are back on the trees.
Yeah. You use those for
$20? You know, Stevie at the...
My leaves are 100.
When Stevie at the top of the show at the 7 p.m. New York time talking about, the warm weather. Hey, Stevie, you know in 3 weeks' time, weeks' time, it's going to be summer?
I know.
So what happened to spring?
We don't have that anymore.
You know?
Yeah, it's not in this part of the world.
You know, we were talking about 3D printing, And sometimes we look at something, we say, okay, I'm looking at a technology, and we're talking about 3D printing, but someone say, you know what?
4D.
Why 3D printing? I could do something with something else. Now, one of the things that sparked the whole story about 3D printing was guns. The ability to print a gun and actually fire the gun. Someone actually said, I could do something better than that. I don't need a 3D printer. I can use Lego bricks. Now, you know what Lego bricks are? Those little things that you put together, snap together. And he was able to create a gun and fire the gun. And he's actually said he's in the midst of writing a book that will be released by the end of the month. It's called The Brick Gun. And it's from No Starch Press. That's it's sort of like, what else are they going to think of?
I'll tell you what it doesn't matter what they're going to think of. It's what they actually do with this stuff. You know the guy who came out with the 3D printer of a gun and fired?